This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه ثم أما بعد. So today inshallah we will go over القواعد الفوائد الضوابط the guidelines and benefits of the second major legal maxim, that's اليقين لا يزول بالشك. Certainty is not overruled by doubt. And I have one ضابط only and one فائدة only under this section, which is غلبة الظن معتبرة في الغالب. That's predominant assumption is generally taken into account or generally considered. Generally taken into account or generally considered. غلبة الظن معتبرة في الغالب. We started to talk about this last time. غلبت is predominant, then assumption or presumption, معتبرة, considered, في الغالب, in general. في الغالب, in general. So غلبت الظن معتبرة في الغالب. Predominant assumption is considered in general or generally taken into account or consideration. And we've talked about the different degrees of ظن and يقين, the spectrum. And we said يقين is 0% and 100%. And شك, doubt, is 50-50. And ظن is anywhere from 51 to 99%. And وهم, conjecture, is anywhere from 1% to 49%. And we said last time, لا عبرة بالتوهم. لا عبرة بالتوهم. This is a قاعدة. The قاعدة said that conjecture is not given any consideration. Conjecture is not given any consideration. And that would make perfect sense because the قاعدة tells us that شك is not given consideration against يقين. شك is the 50-50. If you're talking conjecture that is even less than 50%, then of course, لا عبرة بالتوهم, conjecture is not considered. And there are some nuances to this, and you know, we sometimes they consider shak, and sometimes they consider even less than shak, but that is the qa'ida in general to be aware of. And one of the applications of al-qa'ida that we did not mention last time, and I would like to mention this time before I proceed to addressing غلبة الظن, applications of لا عبرة بالتوهم, is if you have a pregnant woman die and her fetus is inside her, what do you do? A pregnant woman dies, her fetus inside her. Keep in mind, they're talking about their circumstances. شق البطن is not a cesarean section. You know, شق البطن is to open her like stomach up and get the baby. This used to be not a cesarean section. This used to be quite a messy thing because they would do it with a knife and stuff. Now, so what do we do here? This is a matter that is controversial among the mazahib. In our mazhab, we don't get the baby out because لا عبرة بالتوهم will work in mazhab even if the baby is alive. You don't get the baby out because the sacredness of her body is certain or not certain. The life of the baby is متوهم or certain. متوهم. It's a fetus inside. Like, we don't know if this is alive, not alive. So حياة متوهمة. It is assumed that there is a baby inside and that baby is still alive. Therefore, you don't get the baby out. What about trying to bring it out from the canal? They allow women to do this. They don't allow men to do this because the sacredness of her body is certain. The life of the baby is not certain. So here, لا عبرة بالتوهم will overrule. So this is one thing that I feel a little bit uncomfortable about, because if there is a life, you know, life is sacred, you want to save that life. And yes, there are many scholars who said you open the abdomen and you get the baby out. But it is important also to know that this is subject to discussion in our tradition and in our madhab. The dominant view does not allow us to open, because it shows that our fuqaha, because they talk a lot about, you know, al-fiqh al-dhukuri, and fiqh al-dhukuri means male-dominated fiqh. And in all honesty, it is male-dominated. And in all honesty, the fuqaha sometimes may not be quite aware of problems that the women have. That's natural. But there are no, like, ill intents there. You know, the fuqaha were not trying to subjugate and subdue women. And they were not, they were well-meaning. Therefore, you know how prized children are to them. And despite that, they would, they're saying, you don't touch her. You don't open her up to get the child out because her body is sacred. So women were not basically a reproductive machine for them. Women were like sacred humans that are not to be treated like a reproductive machine. Had they thought of women as reproductive machines, no one would have argued, yes, get the baby out. Open her up, get the baby out. But that's not the case here. Then today, inshallah, we will try to be as fast as we can, because I hope I will be able to finish it, because it will be very helpful if we get it all together. Even if I go over by a few minutes, I will try to finish this particular qaida, غلبة الظن معتبرة في الغالب, or predominant assumption is considered in general, or generally taken into account. So in the 159th qaida or maxim of Ibn Rajab, you know, he is basically the one known for his qawaid in the Hanbali mazhab. In his 159th qaida or maxim, he discusses a particular scenario where you have competing with default presumption, al-asl. إذا تعارض الأصل وغلبت الظن. So أو الظن. If there is a conflict between الأصل, which is what? Original or default assumption or presumption. Original or default assumption or presumption. Conflicts with apparent indicators. So I have an apparent indicator that is pointing to one direction that is different from the default assumption. So then and we will see, the applications will make this clear, but we will see here that they will divide this into four different categories, four different divisions. The first division is if the apparent indicator is a legal proof, is a shar'i proof, is a shar'i hujja, such as two witnesses. You know, someone, there is a land that is, someone lives on the land, so the default presumption is that it belongs to them. I have now two credible witnesses come and testify on behalf of a claimant that this land is theirs and it was sold to them on such and such day. This is a shar'i hujja or not? Two credible male witnesses, shar'i hujja. So in this case, what am I going to do? Am I going to say we have two competing factors here? We have the default presumption that this person on this land owns it, and I have an apparent indicator. No, I'm not going to say this at all. If it is a shar'i hujja, it rules. Shar'i hujja rules. So two credible witnesses will rule. And certainly, if there are other indications, the things will be investigated. But if we're talking about default presumption and two credible witnesses will rule over the time. Likewise, because there are many indicators, it's not just two witnesses. And I don't know if I shared this particular article that I wrote recently with you or not yet in your folder, but if I haven't, I will. Inshallah, it's about an article about the Muslims' stance toward ethical crises and scandals and things of that nature. And I talk in this article about the al-adilla fil Islam, al-ithbat fil Islam, or legally admissible evidence in Islam. It's not limited to the two male witnesses that some people, you know, think about. It's a lot more than this. But anyway, I just want you to know that al-hujja shar'iyya in Islam is not limited to two witnesses or one male witness and two female witnesses or these things. But then the first one, you have hujja shar'iyya or legal evidence. Here, we have al-asl and al-zahir. Al-asl is the default presumption. Al-zahir is the apparent indicator. So here, al-zahir, which is the apparent indicator, will always beat al-asl, will always overrule al-asl, always overrule al-asl, because al-zahir is a legal evidence. Al-zahir is a legal evidence. Now, we have certain scenarios where we have other scenarios where al-asl will beat al-zahir. According to the madhab, we have other scenarios where al-zahir will beat al-asl. You may say that this is like this. Number three is like number one. Al-zahir will beat al-asl. But they wanted to separate this to say there is no discussion here. It's a hujja shar'iyya. You know, it's something that, you know, the sharia established to be a hujja. So there is no discussion here. There is discussion here. And then we have The last category is when they disagree inside the madhab. Disagree inside the madhab. Does the asl beat the zahir, or does the zahir beat the asl? Does the or overrule the asl? So let's take some examples. So under this first category, we said the witness of testimony of two people. The testimony of one person when it's not in court, when one trustworthy person tells you, I saw a dog lick this dish. You go by what they say? Yes. One trustworthy person, you go by what they say. Again, at the same time, entrance of prayer time, one trustworthy person tells you, the muazzin all the time. Don't we just follow the muazzin? Does everybody sort of check out or if the muazzin is right or not? No. So we follow the one trustworthy person. Testimony of a single person also regarding the entry of Ramadan, and that's one of the one of the positions in the Hanbali madhab, that testimony of a single witness starts the month of Ramadan. So sometimes the disagreements that you see between people over the beginning and end of Ramadan, some of these disagreements are not all related to personality and are not all related to people being like, you know, as some people think that people are just being egotistic and everybody is clinging to their own positions, but they are based in disagreements and fiqhi disagreements. Some of them are based in fiqhi disagreements. So this is the first category. Is this category clear? When you have a hujjah shara'iyyah, there is no discussion. You go by the hujjah shara'iyyah. Hujjah shara'iyyah is not always two witnesses. Someone tells you, you know, one trustworthy person tells you the prayer time started, the qibla is this way, I saw a dog lick this dish. You go by what they say, because the apparent indicator here, why would I disbelieve, that person? We also go by one credible testimony in accepting reports from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Al-hadith, you know, in the chain of narration, if you have one credible person from one credible person from one, that's an acceptable chain. Okay, second category, instances where the original assumption, al-asl, is upheld, ignoring the apparent indicators. So al-asl will beat the apparent indicator. I will ignore the apparent indicator. I will go by the default assumption. Here are some examples. For instance, if you doubt whether you broke your wudu or not, you still have your wudu. If you doubt if pure water has been made impure or not, in this case, if the al-asl will beat it, if you doubt whether impurity, whether it is ritual impurity or physical impurity, you will go by al-asl until otherwise proven. And Ibn al-Laham, in his Fawa'id al-Usuliyya, says the following. It says it's impermissible to sell items intended for prohibited uses, such as grape juice, to someone who will make wine or something similar. Several of our ashab or fellows said this applies if such knowledge is certain. So here they disagreed whether, like, if you sell grapes, for instance, to someone who will make wine of the grapes, do you need to be certain that they will sell, that they will make wine of it, and that is when it becomes a haram? Or your predominant assumption, ghalabat al-dhan, would make it haram for you to sell it? So, you know, most of the ashab, most of the fellows in the madhab had said you need to be certain. You have to have ilm, not dhan. Ilm, knowledge, certainty, not dhan. But Imam Abu al-Abbas, that's Taqiyuddin ibn Taymiyyah, he goes by ghalabat al-dhan all the time. He thinks that ghalabat al-dhan will always overrule unless otherwise indicated. So he basically tarada qa'idatahu. He stayed committed to the qaida of ghalabat al-dhan will rule. And he also cited that the al-ashab, that's Hanbali, our Hanbali fellows, had said that if you have ghalabat al-dhan that your tenant will use whatever it is that you lease out to them in haram purposes, that this would be forbidden. So he says they use the ghalabat al-dhan here, and sales are like leases. If you're saying you can't lease to them if you have predominant assumption that they will use it in something haram, you can't also sell to them if you have a predominant assumption that they will use it for something that's haram. Okay, another example where ghalabat al-dhan, purity, that is ritual, and here sales, because even though Imam Abu al-Abbas said predominant assumption will overrule, but the most of the ashab said you need to have knowledge. Predominant assumption will be ignored. And then if a wife, after a prolonged period of living with her husband, claims that he failed to provide her with the obligatory maintenance. So a wife that's been living with her husband for 2-3 years, and then she goes to court and says that he was not spending on me. Now, it may be a little bit different nowadays. It may be a little bit different nowadays because it's maybe a little bit more possible. But in their times, that was not actually quite possible. So why are you coming today to complain? Why have you not complained before? So the dominant position in the madhab is what? We believe the wife or the husband who says, because what does the wife have on her side? The asl or the apparent indicator? Al-asl is that she didn't receive any nafaqa, because nafaqa is a positive action, you know, to give people money, that's a positive action. The non-existence is the asl, is the original or default assumption, non-existence. I didn't get anything, she didn't get anything. Prove it that she got something. The apparent indicator is what? No, I mean, she has been living with him for a couple of years and she hasn't complained about it before. So predominant assumption here is that he was spending on her. I mean, let's say she came after 15 years and said, he hasn't been spending on me, I need my nafaqah. So here, most of the ashab said, we will believe the wife. And Imam Abu al-Abbas said, no, it will be basically, we will go by the apparent indicators, customary, the custom rules this out. Customs rule this out. If someone is certain about the presence of purity or impurity in water and clothing, we did talk about this, in marriage, divorce, and related matters, we said this before, if someone is in doubt whether they divorced their wife or not, did they divorce their wife? No, they did not. They did not. Because what is the default assumption? Default assumption is the continuity of marriage. Continuity of marriage. Marriage was established by certainty or not. Yes, they got married, they had the witnesses. Okay, now they are married. That is called what? Default assumption. Default assumption will continue until we get out of it by certainty. By certainty. So here, apparent indicators of zahir will not... will be disregarded, will be dismissed because of the sacredness of the contract, it will be dismissed. So if you're thinking about whether you said I divorce you or not, if you're thinking about the conditions of divorce, contingency, if you do this or you do that, and you're in doubt whether this happened or did not happen, then we will go by Al-Asla is the continuity of marriage, and we will disregard anything, even if ghalabat al-dhan is what? 99%. Now, is 99% yaqeen? It is very hard because we're just trying to make things a little bit simpler. But people in their minds, they can't really, they don't have a meter for this. But what they want to tell you is, even if it is predominant assumption, even if you think most likely, when you say most likely, that is ghalabat al-dhan, predominant assumption. If you say most likely I divorced her, she's still your wife. Most likely I divorced her, she is still your wife. Okay. Now, doubt about the answer of Fajr in Ramadan. If you're in doubt whether the Fajr came in or not, Fajr has not come in. Because Fajr, not in Ramadan in general, but if you're fasting, can you continue to eat until you're certain that Fajr came in? Yes. Because here, al-asl is what? Baqa' al-layl. The continuity of the night, you know, not the entrance of the time of Fajr. That's not al-asl. So that's another one. Now the third category, instances where apparent indicators of zahir are followed, ignoring the original assumption al-asl. So here we will ignore al-asl and we will go by al-zahir. We did it here, but here we have a hujjah shar'iyya, so we didn't have to think about it. We will do it here, and then we will need to compare between this and this and that category, and why did they give precedence to al-asl over al-zahir, al-zahir over al-asl, and why did they disagree here? At the end of our talk today, inshallah, we'll talk about this. We'll address this. So the third category: if one doubts after completing a prayer or any other act of worship, if you doubt after completing a prayer or any act of worship, whether you fulfilled the conditions of the prayer or not. After completing the prayer, you doubt, did I pray 3 or 4? After completing the prayer, do you doubt, did I recite al-Fatiha in the second rak'ah? Did I, you know, make ruku'ah in the third rak'ah? You doubt something. Then what is al-asl here? Al-asl here is that you have not prayed, you have not done it, you have not fulfilled the conditions. لَمْ تَبْرَأْ ذِمَّتُكَ, you know, you're not clear of the obligation. You're still liable for the prayer. That is al-asl. But al-zahir here is what? The apparent indicator is what? Apparent indicator is that when a Muslim performs an act of worship, they perform it right. When a Muslim performs an act of worship, they perform it right. So here, they gave precedence to al-zahir, the apparent indicator, over al-asl. For us, the original or the default assumption. And it's quite clear, you know, because if people started to doubt what they have already finished, the acts of worship that they have already finished, this will lead to obsessiveness. If someone predominantly assumes that the time for prayer has entered, their prayer is valid. So here you go by predominant assumption. You go by predominant assumption for Qibla, you go for the predominant assumption for the entry of the time of the prayer. If your predominant assumption is the time of prayer entered, then and we said here, after completion. Entrance of, okay. Now, then breaking the fast is permissible based on a predominant assumption. Breaking the fast is permissible based on predominant assumption that the time of Maghrib is in. A missing person's wife marries or remarries based on predominant assumption. So, you know, this is one of the things that are a little bit difficult in our tradition, you know, the wife of the missing person, because some of the rules about it are a little bit difficult. But anyway, if, you know, that missing person, we will give her, you know, in certain circumstances, we will give her 4 years to wait for him, or we will give him 4 years. She will be waiting for 4 years. After the end of the 4 years, we will allow her to get remarried for years. Now, the missing person in our times, you know, many of the scholars, because there is always a dialogue between the law and current realities, always a dialogue. So most of the scholars nowadays, they have different fatawa, the majama, the scholars, and so on, because there is no reason for someone to not be able to call or to send like an email or something to say, I'm stuck here, you know. But during their times, it was a little bit different. So rules for the wife of the missing person have changed. And this is one of the things that change with the passage of time, because not it's not because about time, but because time and place are vessels for circumstances and conditions. You know, they okay. So anyway, the when she gets remarried, what is the default assumption? The guy is still alive or not? The guy is still alive. Default assumption. What's the apparent indicator? It's been 4 years. We haven't heard of him. You know, it looks like he died or something. So that's the predominant assumption. Here, the predominant assumption will rule, overrule al-asl. If someone is raised in the abode of Islam among Muslims, commits fornication, and then argues, I didn't know about it, I didn't know it's haram, and, you know, that. What is al-asl? Al-asl is he doesn't know, because knowledge is a default assumption? No, ignorance is the default assumption. So al-asl here, he didn't know. But the apparent indicator is what? You know, you grew up in a Muslim land among Muslims. It's, no, please. So here, the predominant assumption will overrule al-asl. Now, in support of this qaida, grew up in a Muslim land. Oh, okay, so in support of this qaida, الشيخ السعدي رحمه الله said, إذا قويت القرائن قدمت على الأصل. إذا قويت القرائن قدمت على الأصل. When the apparent indicators are strong, they are given precedence over al-asl or the default assumption, if they are strong. If the apparent indicators become strong, they are given precedence over the original assumption. Now, the fourth category, scholars in the Hanbali madhab disagreed among themselves whether we will give precedence to al-asl or to al-zahir. One of them is, if a dog inserts its head into a vessel, and we don't know if it licked or not, just inserted his head into the vessel, but we're not sure. So al-asl, it didn't lick. Al-zahir, it licked. So here, they will disagree. They'll disagree. Some of them will say it will go by the asl. Some of them will say we'll go by the zahir. Clothing and utensils of non-Muslims, and this is something that you come across because you live in non-Muslim lands. So clothing and utensils of non-Muslims. What is al-asl and what is al-zahir? Al-asl is that they're pure. Al-zahir is that they are not. Why is it al-zahir? Because they don't follow the same sort of rituals that we do, the same guidelines that we do, and they may cook things in their utensils that are not halal for us and things of that nature. So we have three different positions in the madhab: permissibility, permissible, disliked, and prohibited unless washed. So if it is prohibited on, you know, like, The stronger position of the madhab is permissibility, unless you're quite confident, like you're certain that, unless you're certain. So certainty here will be overruled by certainty. But if there is no certainty, the default is permissibility. These are all very strong positions in the madhab. Permissible is strong, disliked is for strong, prohibited unless washed also is somewhat strong, and it textually also it's strong. And if it is basically or prohibited with a condition, with a contingency, it's prohibited unless washed if the predominant assumption is strong that there is impurity. So when is the predominant assumption strong that there is impurity? For clothing, the clothing that are just like the clothes that cover the private parts, garments that contact the private parts, for utensils, the utensils of people who are not careful about what they eat. So people who slaughter the animals are not halal for us. And they also mentioned Christians versus Jews because they eat pork. So in this case, it will be prohibited unless washed. The default is easier for us. In the madhab, the default is permissibility. Default is permissibility. Because the Prophet ﷺ also was hosted. Yes, he was hosted by Jews, but it is hard for us to basically address every one of these details and to give it justice, but there are evidences on the side of the madhab's chosen position of permissibility. Clothes of children or those unmindful of purity. There are three different opinions. Clothes of children and those who are unmindful of purity. Disliked, not disliked, prohibited until washed. So basically, the dominant position in the madhab is that it is disliked in the prayer. Disliked in the prayer. So when you hold your little baby in the prayer, that is disliked until you're quite confident that they are pure and they're close. Doubt in the number of prayer units. So we have three different opinions that exist. If two of the followers declare the imam's error, okay. Doubt in the number of prayer units. So if you're not sure whether you prayed three or four, have you prayed three or four? The madhab is you pray three all the time, whether you're the imam or the ma'moom. But there are two different positions, other positions in the madhab. One of them will say yataharra, investigate, and go by predominant assumption. This is a position in the madhab because we have different reports. You know, one report the Prophet ﷺ said, فَلْيَبْنِ عَلَى مَسْتَيْقَنْ. One report that the Prophet ﷺ said, فَلْيَتَحَرَّ. فَلْيَتَحَرَّ, let him investigate and go by predominant assumption. فَلْيَبْنِ عَلَى مَسْتَيْقَنْ, let him base it on certainty. We have these two reports in the Sunnah. We have these two positions in the madhab. And then we have a synthesis in the madhab in the middle, which says, if there are supportive indicators, such as an imam leading the congregation, and no one is correcting him, he goes by predominant assumption. He goes by predominant assumption because there are people there to correct him if he is wrong. So he goes by predominant assumption. This position used to be supreme in the middle generation of the madhab. The later generation of the madhab, they dropped that position from the Mu'tamad, and they authorized the position that we will always go by certainty. So base it on certainty, the lower number. Close. Okay, clothing and utensils. And the one that we are talking about here is number of units. Number of rak'at. Okay, now doubt in burial. if two people corrected the imam should go by the correction of two people. Burial in the Islamic domain. So if you find someone who we don't know their religion, you find them in the Islamic domain, you find them outside the Islamic domain. Is there a difference? Yes, there is a difference. Because default assumption outside the Islamic domain is what? Not Muslim. But is there another default assumption competing with this? كل مولود يولد على الفطرة. Every child is born on the fitra. It's another competing default assumption, so we'll come back to it later. But default assumption in the land of Islam, Muslim. Default assumption in the land of outside the land of Islam, not Muslim. So in the land of Islam, in an Islamic domain, if you find someone and you're not sure about their religion, if there are no signs of belief or disbelief on them, or if the signs conflict, or there are no signs of belief or disbelief on them, what do you do? Muslim, default. Yeah, find somebody in the land of Islam, no signs on them, Muslim, default. If only signs of disbelief are present, they are not Muslim, only signs of disbelief. However, they even disagreed in the madhab. This is the dominant position. They are not Muslim, but they disagreed in the madhab. So in the land of Islam, they disagreed, even with signs of disbelief, whether they will pray for them or not. If they are not certain that they are not Muslim, and there are just signs of disbelief, you know, someone has a necklace with a cross, it's a sign of disbelief. But, you know, will we pray? They even disagreed, because the default assumption here in the land of Islam is that everybody is Muslim. But the dominant position is, if there is a sign of disbelief and you don't know their religion, you don't need to extend the final rights to them. Conversely, in non-Islamic lands, if the deceased bears a sign of Islam, they are prayed over. So, you know, keep a sign of Islam on you. Like, I guess for the sisters, it's always easier. They have, like, signs. They are prayed over. Otherwise, they are not. Another foundation presumption is that every child is born on the fitra. So what about mixed halal and haram earnings? And so if someone has their money has mixed, their money is mixed, they you know, from haram and halal. And keep in mind, if your money is mixed, you go by predominant assumption and guesstimating how much there is haram in the money, and you donate it. It's a predominant assumption. You go by ghalabat al-dhan. If the haram money cannot be determined accurately, you go by predominant assumption and donate it. Now, can I eat from your food? Can I deal with you? Can I eat from your food? What should I do if your money is mixed? Here, in the Hanbali madhab, is, and I put the note for you, just read it carefully, because there is so much discussion about this. It's a long footnote, but I wanted to keep it here because it is important. You know, the long footnote from Al-Furu' by Ibn Muflih. And Al-Furu' is basically the broom of the madhab. It brings in all the different positions in the madhab. But you will find there four different positions. Maybe, okay, four different positions. Permissible, it is permissible with dislike. This is one position. Impermissible, prohibited, but prohibited so we will have prohibited period, prohibited if it is more than one third, prohibited if it is more than, if it is the majority. So majority is more than one half. Prohibited if the haram in your money is more than one half, you know, eating from your food, like dealing with you is prohibited. One third, that's another position in the madhab, or just prohibited. And then impermissible. Okay, no, forget about this. It's here. So, so it's impermissible, period. Impermissible if it is more than one third or one half, and permissible with the, you know, karaha. It's still somewhat disliked. Which one is ultimately the position in the madhab? It is very, very difficult to judge because at Imam Ahmad, there are conflicting reports from Imam Ahmad, but you may say that if you know specifically a particular property or this money is haram, then you must avoid this money. If you are uncertain, you know, it's not based on strong ghalabat al-dhan, you're uncertain, or the money is negligible, or you don't have that much certainty, negligible portion of the income is haram, or you don't have that much confidence that there is haram, on this side, it's halal. It's halal for sure. On the other side, if a specific property is haram. In the middle between them, it is likely permissible with dislike. Because we have basically, even in furu', he will mention supportive evidence from, like, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. He said its benefit is for you and its sin is on him, you know, to eat from, like, to get accept a gift from someone whose income is haram, its benefit is for you, its sin is on him. It seems that this is the stronger position. It's disliked. It's permissible with dislike. And the degree of dislike is proportionate to the degree of hurma in his money. Where is it coming from? And the portion of haram money in his wealth. So the greater the portion of haram money is his wealth, like someone, for instance, who owns a liquor store, and that's all his business. He owns a liquor store, that is all his business. That's quite, you know, quite problematic. So here, the degree of dislike, you know, is certainly in the highest. Or someone whose income is only from riba, something of that nature. So these examples that we have given, these different examples that we have given, show us that sometimes they prioritize the apparent assumption, or apparent indicators. Sometimes they follow the default or presumption, and sometimes they disagree. Let's try to make a synthesis of this. But before the synthesis, let me go over some other applications that may clarify certain things. That when there is no conflict, predominant assumption is often considered. And here is an example. Here is an example of how the scholars sometimes find it a little bit difficult to decide, and why? Because life is complicated. Life is really complicated. Let us say a woman in her waiting period, or even after her waiting period, she hasn't gotten married yet. Yeah, during her waiting period, after her waiting period, she feels something in her stomach. I mean, is she pregnant or it's gas? She feels something. Now, what are they going to tell her? You'll have to wait until you're confident you're not pregnant, because if you're pregnant, you'll have to wait. You can't get married when you're pregnant from the first marriage. You can't get a second marriage until you verify. So what if she gets married? This marriage is invalid. This marriage is invalid. Okay, so what if she gets married and then feels something? So her waiting period ended in 1 month. Can the waiting period end in 1 month in the Hanbali Madhab? Yes, because the shortest duration of purity in the Hanbali Madhab is 13, not 15 days. So 13, 1 day for Haid, 13 Tohr, 1 Haid, 13 Tohr, then you're done. And then, so that is like 13 and 13, and between them, the 1 day, it's pretty quick. So she's done in 1 month, and then she gets married, and then she feels something. What do we do here? So do we go by default? What apparent indicators, default assumption? Here, we will validate this marriage, because the certainty of marriage, this is a marriage that happened, you know, she finished her period. She legally, shara'i-wise, she finished her period. I don't care if in reality, ontologically, she finished her period or not, because ontologically, she may not have finished her period. You know, whatever it is that she got in the middle, that 1 day of Haid that she got in the middle, this was sporadic bleeding, and this was not Haid. She counted this as Haid. She said, you know, but shara'i-wise, her period ended. You know, ontologically, it doesn't matter. Shara'i, period ended. So when she got married, that marriage should have been valid. Now she feels something. Of course, this is not from this current marriage, because she's not going to start to feel a baby right away. So she feels something, and, you know, so what are we going to do now? Now, we will validate this marriage, but we will ask them to abstain from consummation, ask them to abstain from, you know, marital relationships until things are sorted out. Why? Because, you know... that is why we will have to wait until she verifies. That's why he shouldn't touch her. The second husband should not touch her until we verify if she's pregnant or not, because that could be a pregnancy from the previous marriage. This man is what? But how do women feel something? You know, when do women start to feel the baby moving? After 4 months, right? Yeah, after 4 months. You know, babies who move quicker than this are miraculous. But, you know, it would take 4 months for the baby to start moving. So if we're going by the movement, it takes about 4 months for the baby to move. And certainly, it's not just about the moving. It's about also the size of the abdomen and other indicators, other apparent indicators of the presence of pregnancy. So in this case, the apparent indicator is that this is a pregnancy from the previous marriage. Okay, so there are other examples of their differences in acting upon al-dhan, or predominant assumption. So in Al-Qawa'id wal-Fawa'id, Ibn Imam Ibn al-Laham says, the author of Al-Muharrar reported consensus that it is prohibited for a woman, prohibited. So this is an author of Muharrar, Al-Majd Ibn Taymiyyah. He said that it is prohibited for a woman to go, to follow the funeral and go to the graveyard, prohibited for a woman to visit the graves if she knows it will lead her to commit a prohibited act. He says, if she knows. When they say knows, means what? Ilm. Ilm means what for them? Certainty. Ilm is certainty. Knows, when I say she knows, meaning she ta'lam, certainty. Assumes, the dhun, is different. When she assumes, it's different. But he said, if she assumes she will be wailing, she cannot go. So ilm knows, and here assumes. So he said, if she knows that she will do a prohibited act, she can't go. If she assumes that she will be wailing, she cannot go. So Ibn al-Laham ta'aqqabahu, Ibn al-Laham basically commented on this. He critiqued this. He said, why are you differentiating between wailing and other prohibited acts? You either say knows all across or assumes all across. And then he also argues that they say, the ashab, the fellows, including the author of Al-Muharrar, they say that if she knows she will commit a prohibited act in Al-Hammam, the bathhouse, or the man will commit, if the man knows that he will commit a prohibited act in the bathhouse, then he should not go. But if he assumes and doesn't know, is not certain, then he can go to the public bathhouse. Therefore, he says, use knowledge, certainty, or, you know, all across, you know, so that, and in all honesty, particularly in our times where things are very difficult, if we say to people, if you assume something would be haram, you plan to do it, there will be so much that there are so much restrictions. Therefore, in our times, the kinder thing is to say, if you know something would be haram. Know means what? Certain something would be haram. So the stronger, from the foregoing, it becomes clear that, so this is my synthesis now. From the foregoing, it becomes clear that the default stance among them is to act upon ghalabat al-dhan, predominant assumption. Yeah, they're acting most of the time on ghalabat al-dhan. They are not disregarding ghalabat al-dhan. They're acting on ghalabat al-dhan most of the time. And let me tell you, when that is the case and the exceptions, it is unequivocally the case that we will act on ghalabat al-dhan or predominant assumption, apparent indicators, if it is based on a sharia proof, hujjah shar'iyyah. Okay. It also applies to matters grounded in ijtihad. Matters grounded in ijtihad, we can't wait for certainty. We can't wait for certainty to know the qibla. We can't wait for certainty to know the entrance of the prayer time. So these are matters that are based on ijtihad. You just can't basically base them on certainty because that would be paralyzing. That would be paralyzing. So predominant assumption will overrule. It also where certainty is unattainable. Certainty sometimes can be unattainable. Like if a doctor tells you that if you fast, this will cause deterioration of your condition, or this will delay your healing, things of that nature. Can a doctor be certain about these assessments? No, certainty here is unattainable, you know. Or if a doctor tells you that you need to sit down while you pray because you just, if you prostrate, this will cause you this or that, etc. The testimony of one Muslim trustworthy doctor in the madhab, in the madhab. Their testimony would allow you to follow their counsel. Now, does it have to be Muslim in the madhab? Yes. The Maliki said, no, it doesn't have to be Muslim. You can go by the testimony of one non-Muslim, trustworthy doctor, physician. But in the madhab, it has to be Muslim. It's not that in the madhab you have to go to a Muslim doctor, but a Muslim, the doctor is the one that will give you the license to not fast. You know, the opinion of the Muslim doctor is what gives you the license to not fast or to pray sitting or to do things of that nature. You could always go to a non-Muslim doctor, a physician, to do surgery on you. But if he tells you you cannot fast, then you will have to consult a Muslim doctor. But the Maliki said it doesn't have to be. Okay. Now, sometimes also, certainty is difficult to achieve. It's not, unattainable, but difficulty to achieve. So if someone possesses both lawful and unlawful wealth, and they're unable to, figure out exactly how much is, the portion, then they need to guesstimate. Now, if there, communal obligations, furud al-kifaya, we will have to go by our predominant assumption here. How do we know that furud al-kifaya have been fulfilled? Like if we say furud al-kifaya, how do I know that enough people went out to Salat al-Eid? If I have a predominant assumption that enough people went out to Salat al-Eid, I may stay at home. Don't do it, but that's what fard kifaya means. If you assume that enough people did it, you don't have to do it. Also, we will go by predominant assumption when it's supported by another foundational principle. And where a decision must be made between two possibilities. You go by predominant assumption where you have two possibilities. One of them is more likely than other, but the decision has to be made between the two possibilities. Two women came to Dawood and Sulaiman fighting over a baby. Everybody is claiming that this is my baby. They had two little babies. The wolf ate one of them, and the one who's living, they're fighting over the baby. And how did Sulaiman figure out who the mother was? He said, I'll split the baby between you. I'll split the baby between you. So the mother quickly said, no, it's hers. So he figured from her compassion that she would be the mother. Had this been in our Sharia, what would we have done? Qafa, physiognomy, resemblance, kinship resemblance. We would have gone by this. And if this is not possible, then we may have used Sulaiman's idea, Then next is to ward off doubts, such as resolving hesitation regarding the completion of worship. So sometimes we go by predominant assumption because the contrary will result in obsessiveness and too much doubt. However, they sometimes abandon predominant assumption. They sometimes abandon and stick to al-asl, the default presumption. When do they do this? Out of caution for acts of worship, such as when they tell you, base it on certainty. You're in doubt whether you prayed three or four, base it on certainty. You prayed only three. Due to the strength of the default assumption, what is an example? Marriage. I doubt whether I divorced my wife. The strength of the default is what? Continuity of marriage. And the strength of the default presumption will make us disregard the apparent indicator, will make us disregard most likely I divorced her. We will disregard the most likely because of the strength of the default assumption. A conflicting principle can make us abandon dhan, or the ease of attaining certainty. If certainty is easy to attain, then we will usually disregard predominant assumption, because certainty is desirable or not. If it is desirable, if it is feasible, then we should go by it. Certainty is always desirable. If it is feasible, then you should go by it. Regarding one who acts upon ghalabat al-dhan, is repetition required if they came to know that they were wrong? If you act on ghalabat al-dhan, is repetition required if you came to know that you were wrong? Yes and no. You know, repetition could sometimes be required. The default is what? Yes, repetition is required. Because لا عبرة بالظن إذا تبين خطأه. So there is no consideration to ظن assumption if it turns out to be incorrect, or if it becomes clear that it was incorrect. لا عبرة بالظن أو بظن تبين خطأه or بظن إذا تبين خطأه. But is this all the time? Not all the time. There are certain exceptions. So we know that we can base, you know, facing of the Qibla and the entrance of the prayer time are based on certainty or ghalabat al-dhan? Ghalabat al-dhan, predominant assumption. Okay, so we did our best and we prayed and it turns out that we prayed before the time came in. And we did our best. We prayed. Turns out that the prayer time has not started. Do we repeat? Yes, we do. Okay. You did your best and figured out the direction of the Qibla and then came to know afterwards that it was wrong. Do you repeat? No, you don't. So what's the difference? The difference is that al-wajib in the first case, what is what you're liable for, what's required of you in the first case, to pray on time, inside the time of the prayer. That's the wajib. The wajib in the case of Qibla is what? To exert your best effort to figure it out. Not to basically face the Qibla, but to exert your best effort in figuring out the direction of the Qibla. Have you done the wajib? Yes. And in this case, you don't need to repeat the prayer. But if you will have to say there is a default in this case, the default is what? Repeat. Repeat is the default. Because الظن الذي تبين خطأه, the assumption that is clearly that has been proven wrong is not given consideration. Is not given consideration. لا عبرة بالظن إذا تبين خطأه. قل قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم. And that was actually great because we just went like 5 minutes over time, 5 or 6 minutes over time, and we finished the whole section. Alhamdulillah. And I hope that it was not too fast. Okay, good. So we will come back at 9:20, inshallah, for الأدب المفرد.